First, back in 2006, the International Astronomical Union knocked Pluto off its perch as the ninth planet in our solar system, downgrading it to a dwarf planet. At the time, the IAU argued that Pluto didn't have what it took to be a planet, and some astronomers have taken apparent glee in its demotion. Here's Neil deGrasse Tyson talking to Stephen Colbert.
Pluto had it coming from the beginning. It was never really belong. Pluto's orbit crosses that of another planet. That's no kind of behavior for a planet. No.
You got to stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
All right. Okay.
No.
Now,
our moon has five times the mass of Pluto. So just get over it.
Was our moon a planet?
No. It's a moon.
It was a controversial move at the time, dividing astronomers, everyday space fans, elementary school students in particular, and more. And the debate was rekindled this week after a group of researchers argued that, yeah, Pluto does meet their definition of a planet. Jim Lattice joins us now. He teaches astronomy at the UW-Madison College of Letters and Science and is the director of the UW Space Place. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, you think that maybe this argument, as I understand it, isn't really that productive, arguing about whether or not we want to call Pluto a planet.
Yeah, I guess I would say that it doesn't seem like, it is productive in the sense that it gets people talking about these things.
Yeah.
And that's been a major defense in the wake of the IAU discussion that, well, there's more good than bad out of this or whatever. So I'm okay with that. Sure, if we talk about that sort of thing. But what you see people doing is what we just heard Neil deGrasse Tyson doing, is tossing out, well, here's the criteria that I think an object ought to meet in order to be worthy of this title. And it's great to talk about what these objects are, but the labels are arbitrary and bound to shift anyway with our growing knowledge. That's what we see happening here, is with increasing knowledge of the solar system, language has to sort of adapt to that. But it really ought to be a technical language, not a changing how people talk in the streets and at home sort of thing.
Right. There's not really an official registry of solar system planets that you fight for the honor of being on, is there?
Well, I mean, it sometimes sounds like that. We talk about, you know, the demotion of Pluto or something along that line, like we're making judgments, like these things have earned awards that we're now depriving them of or something. But this is, of course, not what's going on at all.
Now, as humans, we do love to define things and categorize. What are some of the definitions we're playing with when we talk about what a planet is versus a comet or versus a satellite?
Right. Well, so these sorts of things do come down to looking at ways that we can distinguish one thing from another. And it used to be that anything that wasn't a star or a comet in the sky was a planet, because it moved around. The sun and the moon were considered planets at one time. So, but. Once again, reflecting increasing knowledge of these sorts of things, you start to say, well, the sun doesn't really fit. After Copernicanism, the sun not only doesn't fit physically, but it's not moving around. In fact, it's us that's doing the moving around. And suddenly the Earth, which was not a planet, now is a planet. So the way we use these terms certainly shifts with our knowledge, and that's a good thing. What we have right now is that sort of a planet, well, it's not a star, but it is orbiting around a star. That is, it can't be big enough that it could give off its own light. So it's less massive than a certain amount. It's got to be orbiting around a star, and it has to be large enough to be spherical. Has to have enough gravitational self-interaction to be a spherical body. And then the condition that the IAU put on there, these were pretty much accepted sorts of criteria that I just mentioned, but then they added on there that it has to have exercise some sort of gravitational dominance around its orbit. And that kind of rules out the asteroids, no one of which is, say, dominant. And that's how it kind of ruled out Pluto, because it's not as Tyson was just saying, it has a very tiny mass out there. It doesn't exercise any sort of dominant influence either. But that's a very mushy kind of criterion to talk about. What does it mean? That term was never defined. What does it mean for it to be dominant?
And scientifically speaking, if we say these things are in a category we're going to call planet, are there things in common among them where we can compare and contrast, where it's useful to have this category and to know whether or not we include something like Pluto out there or Ceres in the asteroid belt?
Well, yeah, certainly, because having meaningful categories like this is really important in most branches of science, as we know. If we think of it a little bit like a natural history kind of science, like geology or botany or something along that line, where terminologies are really important, categories are really important for scientists to exchange information about these things. You know, you discover some flower in Africa somewhere and you want to compare it to other known, already known things. And these categories help you organize your knowledge and understand what you have before you. And that kind of thing does have to be established. That's why people have to get degrees in botany or something along that line. So it would be perfectly fine for astronomers, it would probably be important for astronomers to have some sort of coherent taxonomy of planets and things. So the way to go about that, though, is not by redefining common words like planet or something along that line, but to generate one. There is a problem there, and that is that we only have one example of a solar system in front of us right now.
Now, when I was a kid, of course, I learned the nine planets and I memorized them with a mnemonic device. That's one way to learn stuff. Is it maybe more interesting to teach kids about the planets by saying, well, here's eight and then here's Pluto and here's the debate about it? I mean, is that maybe going to be more educational in some ways?
Oh, Given that situation, of course, you can use it for educational purposes. I don't know that it's any more valuable than some other classification that you would also.
Sure.
I mean, we've talked for years about the giant planets and the so-called terrestrial planets, things that are really large and massive and predominantly volatile elements, and things that are a lot less massive and predominantly refractory. We can break these things down any number of different ways. But the what we really need is a lot more knowledge of planets. Again, that's what's happening as this Kuiper Belt, as the population and the character of this whole Kuiper Belt business, of which Pluto and Charon are just members of. That's really what broke the threshold, so to speak, here, is that Pluto is not just the single thing out there, but a member of a group. And so defining it as a member of this group is kind of the direction that things were going. But I don't think it's particularly useful to just to move Pluto into another category for pedagogical purposes.
Talking to Jim Lattice from the UW-Madison, the UW Space Place, UW-Madison College of Letters and Science astronomy teacher as well. Jim, there's a lot of fun news coming out lately about Pluto, some great new images in particular. What do we know now about Pluto that we didn't say 3 years ago?
Well, almost everything. We knew so little about Pluto, and I think this is also powering a certain amount of this attempt to rehabilitate it as a planet or whatever. But certainly, it's turning out to be active in a way that people really didn't expect. You would find an active body that far out in the solar system. The general kind of presumption, and that's really all it was, was that far out, so it's got to be so cold, it's probably just this frozen lump of stuff that hasn't changed since it formed, practically. But in fact, these things have turned, they're currently active, and they interact with each other. These bodies interact with each other in ways that produce really interesting and completely unseen anywhere else topographies on the planet, and chemistries, even, that we have no experience of. So that's all really wonderful, stuff. And we need to know more about bodies like that to understand the formation of the solar system.
Yeah, what unanswered questions? I assume these images raised a whole bunch of questions about Pluto and maybe the Kuiper Belt, too. What do we know now that we didn't know, or what do we want to know next, I should say?
Well, gosh, with Pluto, there's going to be a long agenda, but that's really true of most of the outer solar system, where we've had only very isolated glimpses of them, and that's an extreme case in the case of Pluto, where the New Horizons spacecraft, you know, just flew by there, and there's no chance to take a second look. Oh, you know, let's look at that more closely. Well, too late. You've flown by already, and you're not going back. So it's a difficult, it's a particularly difficult case, but there's a huge amount of stuff. I mean, the internal structure of that planet is unknown. the ability to tell its history. We have enough information from some of it to talk about the history of interactions with other bodies, things like cratering and the renewal of its surface and things like that, but not enough to go back and generalize better. So, yeah, more looks at it would be really important, but they're going to be hard to get.
And I see headlines, I don't know how legit these are, the idea that astronomers are searching for a different ninth planet, that they think that there's gravitational evidence, but we can't see it.
Right. Well, that's a case where if there was a single object explaining the what they basically are is statistical patterns in the orbits of Kuiper Belt objects, and you could imagine a random distribution of orbits, but then we find patterns within the distribution that aren't random, and so you look for an organizing principle. What could have influenced this tendency to, say, align the planet, these orbits in certain ways? And a massive planet out there could do it, but there's no known, but none of the known planets could do it. So, yeah, the inference is maybe there's something. In fact, a really good theory is that there's something much more massive out there.
Now, it's amazing. We keep hearing reports of finding exoplanets or evidence of planets in other solar systems, which is cool, but there's so much we don't know about our neighbors here still.
Right, but we're going to know more about our neighbors by studying these other examples, too. I mean, that's always the case. And in particular, just to go back to the Pluto discussion, mm-hmm. we don't have any information about planets or whatever objects, whatever we would call them, low-mass objects in other solar systems. The exoplanet population is entirely a population of planets, typically as massive as the Earth, but usually way more massive than that. So something as small as a Kuiper Belt structure or something like that, that's almost undetectable at the moment around other stars.
Briefly, as we wrap up, whatever we call Pluto, are you hoping that the talk about it gets people looking up and thinking about what's going on in our solar system?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, that's part of what I do. And it has, at that level, it has succeeded in that, although I think we wouldn't have had to have the debate about planet or not planet. The New Horizons, the stuff we actually know about it is way more important than what we call it. And that's all wonderful stuff. And of course, I welcome that possibility, that conversation.
Jim, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jim Lattice teaches astronomy at the UW-Madison College of Letters and Science and is director of the UW Space Place. He joined us today to talk about Pluto. Some researchers now saying we should call it a planet. After about a decade ago, we said we shouldn't. He says it doesn't matter what we call it. It's pretty cool.